Now, the new 940 Montreal presents The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman.
All week we've been examining the moral sickness that seems to affect every opening of a General Assembly session of the United Nations. Tonight, I want to hear from you out there. You've called in every night, but tonight I really want to hear what your guts tell you. Because this moral sickness, this weakness, this cowardice is beginning to affect us here at home. This political correctness, in spite of the bold words of our Prime Minister. I don't know if it's sinking in. Tomorrow there's supposed to be a march in Ottawa, a demonstration in support of our soldiers in Afghanistan. I don't know what the hell you think of the war. It doesn't really matter. But those young men and women are the best of us. And Hill's staff earlier today were prevented from wearing red, which was the sign of solidarity for this march, because some functionary at the House of Commons said, well, House of Commons staff shouldn't be partisan or political. This isn't partisan and political. This is about our national character. Nothing less than that. It's amazing that Pat Martin, the very principled NDP MP out of Winnipeg, said this is ludicrous, even though his party's leader, of course, wants to talk to the Taliban. Talk about what? I don't know. You heard Jim Duff and I discuss earlier the insane moral relativism and political correctness of the reporters interviewing Ahmadinejad and following Chavez, the almost lackey-like toadiness to them. I think it should stop, don't you? Doesn't your stomach turn? You know, there was a time, we can think back, a more innocent time, when our yearnings for redemptive change seemed possible, and in the heart of New York, they built a palace for peace. It stands today. Its main tower, narrow and lean, seemingly stretching with almost sinewy might, as if soaring to the heavens for inspiration. The curves and planes of its smaller sister building's design seek to reflect the transcendental unity of our common humanity. On a wall at the entrance to this palace are engraved the immortal words of the ancient Hebrew prophet Isaiah, that sword shall be turned into plowshares, and nation shall not make war against nation anymore. And this week, this special place, once thought to be man's last best hope, was defiled again by the most obscene verbal excrement. And sadly, we have no cause for surprise, for this palace, that once glistened for what now seems no more than a brief shining moment, continues its decades-long run as the venue for what Daniel Patrick Moynihan called brutal buffoonery. And sadly, that's the United Nations, and its time may have run out. Adam, welcome.
Welcome. First-time caller, thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I wanted to share my thoughts about what you're talking about. I think one of the things that we're forgetting is as time moves along and as we become more technologically inclined, the power of the media is not only being understood by the public itself, but it's also being understood by the leaders of people who don't follow the West and who don't believe in the same way of thought or
school. Excellent
of thought.
Point, but they know how to manipulate.
However, exactly, but the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, Ahmadinejad, I'm half Persian myself, I'm half Iranian myself, and this is not something that surprises me. I've seen him do this over and over and over again. The reality is that he knows that they want that kind of interview. The only way these guys will allow an interview of this sort is if the interview is scripted, if it's the political correctness that you're talking about.
Yet you remember, if you saw the interview, Adam, Ahmadinejad asked Cooper, are these questions yours or are they the American government's? So
yes.
He was, and Cooper just looked at him blank-facedly. I think you're right. I think it was scripted by Ahmadinejad and his people.
Yes.
But when he came out with that statement, Cooper looked flat-footed.
Yes, absolutely. But if you know anything about them, if you know anything about how these guys work, if you see the way they operate, all of this has been planned. All of the strategists, you know, the people that are behind them know what they want to hear. They want you talking about this. They want anger to fill. They want us to turn on our reporters saying they're soft, saying they're politically correct. And remember, the opportunity that these guys have and the power that these guys have is they can simply say, you know what? If you don't want to go ahead with these guidelines and you don't want us to script it and you don't want to ask us the questions we're asking you to ask us, then we're just not going to do the interview.
Adam, you make great points. Can you stay with us? I just got to pay some bills. Can you stay with us through the short break?
Absolutely. Thanks. Absolutely.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
And tonight, I want to hear from Montreal, and I want to hear from all you listeners across the country, everybody listening on the World Wide Web. I want to hear if you're as sickened as I am by what you've seen at the United Nations this week. And we're particularly speaking with the responsibility of the press right now and how much political correctness we can bear. Adam, you made a great point about the responsibility of reporters not to fall into the trap laid by leaders like Ahmadinejad who script things. Can I ask you to hold on and listen into this conversation, because we've got Al Gordon on the line, the president of the Canadian Coalition for Democracies.
Absolutely. It will be my pleasure.
Al Gordon, how are you? I know you're in transit.
I am. I'm great, Beryl. How are you?
Okay. I want our listeners to hear one short paragraph. And this is from something that Alistair Gordon wrote today. It's in the National Post. I would like to offer an invitation, he writes. There are a few members of the UN who recognize that a brutal global jihad is being waged against the free world, but more who are friends or appeasers of that jihad. Today I am inviting the leaders of those democratic nations who have proven their commitment to defending freedom and tolerance to join me at a conference of free nations to be held in Canada. There we will take the historic first steps in forging a Western alliance to defeat this brutal common enemy. And those words were written by Alistair Gordon, and it was entitled, A Speech I'd Like to Hear from Our Prime Minister. Alistair Gordon, how did Stephen Harper do in your assessment of the UN today?
I think he did well. I mean, I really didn't expect anybody to give anything this direct and to deal with so many issues at once. It was more a fantasy of if I ever had the podium, what I might say. But I think, given the circumstances, he hit on several key points, including the so-called Human Rights Council. And unfortunately, I don't have it in front of me right now, and I'm in transit. But overall, my impression was positive. I think. We haven't heard anything like that from a Canadian Prime Minister probably in 15 years. So
he spoke about the importance of military involvement as part of Canada's engagement in democratic development. He spoke about the importance of the Afghanistan mission. He challenged the UN that part of its future and part of its credibility depends on that success. What irritated me today, and when we finish talking, I'm going to ask Adam about this, and the lines are starting to really blaze here. But what irritated me today, I was listening to a few commentators, and they said, well, you know, Stephen Harper was talking about Afghanistan. He was sucking up to Bush. It amazes me. Stephen Harper was the first Western leader to call for the arrest of Saeed Mortazavi, the Iranian prosecutor that killed Zahra Kazemi, the first to cut off aid to Hamas. He leads, he's accused of following. But when Hugo Chavez stands up and makes a fool of himself, ass-licking Ahmadinejad, nobody says that he's a toady to Ahmadinejad. How do we keep our reason in the West?
I think that's what there's the profound shortage of, is reason, logic, consistency. I mean, it's fine for Chavez to mimic Ahmadinejad, who is a, you know, an apocalyptic madman, but when anything that Canada does, even by coincidence, is the same thing that the U.S. does, suddenly we're toadies of George Bush. It simply does not make sense. Also, why aren't they accusing us of being toadies and followers of the other 26 nations that are involved in Afghanistan?
You anticipated my question.
You know, Holland, Belgium, you name it.
You anticipated my question, and let me bring that question a little closer to home, not even Holland and Belgium. But an editorial in the New York Times recently said that the English-speaking world seems to understand the threat of the global conflict we're in now. What is it in Canada, and there are tragically few people as competent as you are to comment on this, not only in your capacity with the Canadian Coalition for Democracies, but as an observer of the Canadian scene. What is it about Canada that makes us commit fratricide against our leaders on foreign policy, whereas Australia, John Howard sets out the same bold vision as a Stephen Harper, commits more troops to the effort, and nobody's accusing him of toadying to George Bush?
Well, I think in part we have Australia is a country in which the leaders had not discovered the politics of division and resentment. I mean, somebody once defined politics as the systematic organization of resentments for personal gain. And I think in Canada, we got started on that about 40 years ago with Trudeau, with his infantile anti-Americanism and a developing an ethos that whatever the U.S. does, we must do the opposite. So even if the U.S. is doing something profoundly right and profoundly in our interest, it's anathema to this country to do the same thing. And I think what we're seeing today is just the follow-on to that that mentality. I mean, if somebody wishes to criticize something that Canada's doing in terms of foreign policy, then give us reasons why that foreign policy doesn't serve our interests or why that foreign policy doesn't serve whatever interests it's being done for. But, I mean, why?
We have, in other words, two factors at play in Canada. One is that we define ourselves not by anything we stand for, but what we oppose. And secondly, we've got, of course, the politically correct classes of the Jack Laytons, who, as a socialist, wants to talk to the Taliban, who want to kill all socialists and trade unionists.
Yeah, and I think on top of it is a profound lack of knowledge of history, because I don't think these people that are all for pulling out of Afghanistan and letting the Taliban reestablish themselves there and reestablish the terrorist incubator from which 9/11 crawled, that I don't think they could ever point out an example where that approach to a tyrant has ever worked or has ever led to anything but war. And in the case of the last time, it was 45 million dead.
That's correct.
And they clearly don't know that, or they wouldn't be promoting the same misguided policy now.
Alistair Gordon, President of the Canadian Coalition for Democracy, we thank you very much for pulling these precious minutes out of a busy evening. I know you're in Ottawa, and every listener, go to CanadianCoalition.com and take a look at this great article, a speech I'd like to hear. Alistair Gordon, thanks for the work you do.
Thanks so much, Beryl. Good talk.
Have a good evening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Adam?
Yes, sir.
Thanks for being patient.
No problem.
You heard Alistair's critique of Canada. Do Canadians fall into this trap set by foreign leaders like Ahmadinejad, even with greater facility than the Americans do?
Absolutely. One of the things that I've noticed, he brought up so many good points, and it's a treat to have him on, that's for sure. I was listening to him talk, and one of the points he brought to the table was a very interesting one, in the sense that, you know, whenever we stand firm on any kind of point, and it's somewhere along the same lines of the Americans, we very often fall into that trap of being the pions or puppets of the Americans. What we have to understand is, just recently, we were considered as a peace country. We were considered as someone who was implementing peace, who was recognized for our peacekeeping forces.
And peacemaking.
Absolutely.
It wasn't just peacekeeping.
Absolutely. You're right. I side with you on that. And what people have to understand, which is, I think, the reason why we were having the debacle with the Afghanistan war, is because you can have an army of whatever size you want in a foreign country helping them rebuild. But when your prime minister comes out and takes a side, and that side so happens to be the same side as the Americans, you can kiss everything you're doing in that other country goodbye, because that's what gets played on the media. That's what's used against us. And all of a sudden, you see yourself being fooled by these foreign leaders. These guys are tampering the media.
Adam, please hold that thought. We're going to take another short break. We're going to come back with you, and then we're going to talk to Reza after that. Montreal, we're going to be back.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
That's 790-0006. And tonight I want to hear from you. I want to hear that you are as angry and as filled with revulsion as I am on the events in New York at the opening of the General Assembly. That you're tired of the buffoonery, the brutal buffoonery of the Ahmadinejads, of the Chavezes, of everybody that takes pot shots at the West, but then comes to us for aid, comes to us for markets and everything else. We're talking with Adam on the line. We've got Reza standing by. Adam, I wanted to ask you something. You said you were Iranian of Iranian background, or part Iranian.
Yeah, I'm a Canadian. I'm born in Canada, but my father is Iranian.
Right. Now, there is no more You know, I work with Iranian dissidents through the Institute for Public Affairs. We helped several Canadian groups organize the anti-Khatami demonstrations in Washington. Was there a surprise in your family? Before the last election that brought Ahmadinejad to power, we knew the women were against the government. The students were against the mullahs. What was the talk in the Iranian social circles? I know there was great shock in the dissident circles that the moderates didn't win the last election.
Well, you bring up a good point, Beryl. I think that...
Because there's no more, by the way, there's no more pro-Western population in that part of the world than we have in Iran.
No, absolutely. I think that, first, it's very important to understand, Beryl, that, you know, as a Canadian, first and foremost, it's obviously very, you know, it's I am not as connected to the Iranian community as others would be, obviously because of the fact that, you know, most of my surroundings and my business and everything that I do is mostly related to the Canadian community or the Quebecois. But as far as the community is concerned, you know, it's a very taboo subject. It's something that not a lot of people talk about. I think it's something that's hush-hush. I don't think it's spoken in public. I don't think it's spoken in social circles, but I know it's spoken for a fact at home.
You know, you're really right about that. One of the, I don't know if you were listening that night, but we had one of the young women involved in demonstration in Washington was Nazreen Mohammadi out of Los Angeles, and her brother was a student dissident leader named Akbar Mohammadi, who was killed last month by the same prosecutor, Said Mordazawi, who killed Zahra Khazami.
Mm-hmm.
He left a journal called The Prison Diary of Akbar Mohammadi that we'll be publishing in the next issue of the Institute's magazine, Barricades. She was frightened about talking about him.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to talk about him. But she said to me before she got on, I have to tell you, I'm scared.
Mm-hmm.
And then she tells me that talk show hosts have been nervous about hearing the story.
Mm-hmm.
So you're quite right. There's this undercurrent of a discomfort even about talking about things in the West.
Yeah, let me just jump in here real quick and let me clarify something very important. What's very important here is that we're not only talking about, you know, Ahmadinejad, about what he's done. We're talking about a lot of these, you know, leaders that are using the media to their advantage.
Oh, sure.
To stimulate the reaction here. So let's not isolate one nationality or
No. We're talking about Ahmadinejad and Chavez and
absolutely
this whole gang of, they call themselves non-aligned now, but the whole gang of thieves, the night crawlers.
And it's funny because you turned around and mentioned about how you were disappointed in Cooper and the, you know, and the way things played out. You know, it makes me laugh because do you think it would be any different if Peter Mansbridge was
No, I think it'd be worse.
Absolutely.
I think frankly, so you hit it right on. It was scripted by the other side.
And it's not only, this happens all the time. The point is that we're having a serious identity crisis in Canada.
Yep.
We have to get back to the roots. We have to get back to who we are. Too many people are speaking on our behalf. Too many media sources are speaking for us. We have to get back to a peace-loving country, a country that makes peace, like you mentioned earlier in the show.
As well as keeps peace.
And keeps peace, absolutely. And one of the points that I mentioned before, I don't know if you agree with this or not, Beryl, but the way I see things, we've been in Afghanistan a couple of years now, and what we've done there, it's thrown out the window every time Harper opens his mouth. Every time we side, let's play devil's advocate here. Even if it's not fair that if we step up and say something.
Adam, I just got to go to break. If you want, you're more than welcome to hang on. We've got the lines blazing, but I want you to finish your thought.
Okay, thank you.
Montreal will be right back.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
And tonight, we want to get your reaction to what's been going on in the United Nations all week. And more than the United Nations, how the media is treating the whole nest of nightcrawlers, the Ahmadinejads, the Chavezes, all the states that think there's something inherently evil about a Western world that lives free and not under somebody's domination. And we're just wrapping it up with Adam, and then we'll get to Reza. Adam, you were making a point about Afghanistan before the break.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't want to take too much of your time. I want other people to call.
It's a pleasure. Go ahead.
First, I want to go ahead and thank you for the time you gave me on the show. I really do.
It's a pleasure.
It.
Very eloquent.
Beryl, real quick, let me just sum it this way. As far as Afghanistan is concerned, the point is that whether we like it or not, if we do step out and we do make a call or we do make an outing or we do disagree with someone, we might fall into that trap of being considered part of that Western mentality or that American mentality and having to face that. And that might be a reality that we all have to face. Now, there's a way around that. And that way is that we have to always stay right on the fence. We cannot take sides. We have to promote the peace. We have to go back to who we were as Canadians, which was making peace, promoting peace, and not taking sides. And that will be our key to creating an identity for us as Canadians that
okay.
can differentiate
but
us
Adam,
from the American
but
way.
But Adam, in order to keep a peace, you've got to make one. Remember, this country in World War One and Two in Korea had twice as many men and women in uniform as the United States. We led in making peace. If we're a G8 nation and we get all this cheap labor and cheap resources from the third world, and if we aren't involved in offering hope for the yearning for redemptive change that the people there have, how can we call ourselves a moral nation?
The problem is that we have to look at the repercussions of when we do step forward to justify that.
But we have no repercussions on ourselves. It's our own internal self-destruction that's been the problem. And that's what I'm sorry about as a Canadian and as a free citizen of the world. But, Adam, I thank you for your views. You're very eloquent, and we hope to hear from you again.
I will. Thank you very much.
Thank
and,
you.
Keep up the good work, Beryl.
Thanks very much, Adam. Reza, good evening. Thanks for your patience.
Thank you, Beryl. Hi. I've got a couple of comments about what's happening at the UN. One thing that makes me upset is Jack Layton on his stand, always trying to turn everything in a different direction against the mission in Afghanistan. We're there to help get the Taliban out and get civility and democracy there. I'm an Iranian-Canadian also,
yep.
And I go to Iran every summer, and all the young people there agree with me. This guy does not represent the people of Iran. I know the older generation is a little more conservative there, and some of them say, well, if the Americans and Israel has nuclear power, not necessarily weapons, why can't we? But still.
Well, you know, I think you're dead on, and I want to make a distinction here. What bothers me about the position of Layton is that he's talking about opening negotiations with people who wouldn't hesitate for an instant to throw this guy in jail and throw away the key because he's a socialist and he supports trade unionism, which is illegal under Sharia law, under which Afghanistan and Iran operate under right now. So it's the hypocrisy of him pandering here in Canada. Somebody criticized Duceppe today because they thought Duceppe wasn't coming down hard enough, that he was sort of in the middle. Well, you know, at least he's recognizing that you can't come down one side or the other. I wasn't thrilled with him being at the rally. But Layton is just complete pandering to the chattering classes in Toronto. There's no reason or rhyme to a social democrat who is anathema to the conservative mullahs even suggesting to talk to them. What are they going to talk to Mullah Omar about, the Taliban leader?
Exactly.
The place of women?
Exactly.
Not crippling young children and having their arms put under a truck for stealing a loaf of bread?
I don't know how much more dramatic it can get.
There's a case of a 16-year-old girl named Nazreen in Iran. It's an international case. We've had the former Miss World Canada who's trying to bring attention to this issue. 16-year-old girl, she was being raped. She stabbed her rapist in the chest with a little pocket knife. She was sentenced to death. There's a case in Pakistan. Pakistan today, President Musharraf wanted to take rape law out of Sharia law and put it into the civil law or the civil criminal law. So under Sharia law, if a woman is raped, the only time that she can be found innocent of adultery is if there are four male witnesses. So Musharraf thought it was a big deal to take it out of Sharia and put it into the civil administration, but with the same condition of four male witnesses. I'm left speechless.
It's unthinkable the way it's jaded. And what's worse is this Khatami guy coming here to talk in New York, and everybody thinking, oh, he's a moderate, when we know what he did with Kazemi and all the other people that he's... You help execute.
Reza, can you stay with me for a minute or two? I just got to pay some bills.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Montreal. We want to hear from you. 790-0006. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call the Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
And tonight we want to hear from you, Montreal, and we want to hear what your reaction, if you've got a visceral, revulsive reaction to what you're seeing in New York this week, with a nest of night crawlers running around from Ahmadinejad to Chavez, knocking the West while taking from us whatever they want. And we're talking to Reza right now about where we're losing our moral compass on Afghanistan, how we've got left-wing politicians that want to talk to right-wing theocratic tyrants that would kill them as soon as look at them. Where do we regain our compass, Reza? What would you like to say to some of our liberal, small-l-liberal slash socialist slash chattering class salon types?
Well, this is what exactly the mindset that I have on the liberal agenda, trying to go along with the NDP so they can bring a vote of non-confidence and get back into power when they're the ones that started the mission in Afghanistan. So it's contradictory what they're doing.
What a lot of people don't know is why we're in Kandahar. There's been a great deal of reaction, of course, because of the tragic loss of life, and even one life lost is too many, but these are brave soldiers, and these are brave families, and they understand the service and sacrifice and defense of freedom. But let's not forget, you mentioned the Liberal government. The reason that Canada got the Kandahar mission is that all these missions are posted ahead of time, and other coalition partners who had made up their minds to take missions, they grabbed them from the list. The last mission left was Kandahar because Paul Martin couldn't make up his mind. So that's why Canada got stuck with the toughest city.
And you know what they say about Canadian soldiers, the heart that they have in the theater. It's renowned worldwide.
Yep.
And, you know, what's sad is also Quebec society being anti-conservative, anti-U.S., booing at the forum. All this that's gone on for several years now, it's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing, and unfortunately it's a long strain of almost an isolationist feeling that goes back to World War One and the conscription riots. Quebec doesn't feel a sense of engagement. It was always the Queen's War or somebody else's war.
Exactly.
And yet, at the same time, the military valor and the sacrifice of Francophone Quebecers and of Quebec itself was remarkable. So there's always these great two solitudes. Reza, thanks very, very much for calling in. Justin, welcome. Good evening.
Hey. How are you?
All right. You?
Good show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I couldn't help but agree there with the callers calling in, talking about the sort of anti-Americanism and the small liberals, or the liberals hijacking the...
What is it with Canada? I mean, what's wrong with being an ally of a free country?
Nothing. It's just called an inferiority complex. And a lot of these people that you speak to, they haven't been to the States, they haven't been there in years. Everything since post...
I sometimes wonder if Canadians have been anywhere.
Well, they've been on the Internet. That's the thing, right? So they have all this... knowledge, but not much sort of experience in the world, you know. And like you said, isolationism, that's what's happening in Canada right now.
You know, I was listening to another television talk show host from the States recently, and he was looking at the camera and he was going, what don't you people get about why we're friendly with, for example, a state of Israel? Because it's a free country. The other guys want us to bow down to them. What is so difficult to understand? And it, you know, I almost felt like saying, I think I'd like to tape this and just lease a whole bunch of airtime and play it from coast to coast. Why is it so hard? Why is it so difficult, you think? When you talk to your friends, Justin, if you tell them, hey, guys, I don't really care if anybody's an imam, a priest, or a rabbi. I don't want to know from how anybody comes at me with their clothes as a manifestation of faith. For me, that's a charlatan. But I want to live free. I want to live free from government intervention here in Canada. I don't want the government protecting me from me. And I don't want to live in a world where some lunatic is going to tell me how I have to live, how I have to pray, and what I have to do. What is so complicated here?
But the thing is, Israel was sort of imposed, you know, in the Middle East. I mean, from the point of view of the Iranian fellow, you know, he's like, take this Israel and put it up in Canada and see how you guys like it. When he said that a few months ago, I was like, well, that's interesting. That's a sort of different take on it. That's his view on it. You guys are in my sort of backyard. Get out, right? So, you know, why shouldn't we put Israel up here in Canada or somewhere like that? Why does it have to be there?
Except, well, you know, that was my beef with Cooper, and that's why Jim Duff also went crazy. Israel wasn't imposed on anybody. People came to what we know today as Israel, West Bank, and Jordan. Charles Dickens wrote about the first census in 1860 in that area. Jordan, the West Bank, and Israel. 40,000 Jews, 110,000 Muslims.
Yeah.
Everybody came from everywhere else. That area was raped and pillaged by the Romans in 73 A.D., never had a separate government.
Well, at one time it was even a Christian down there, too, going, you know, way back. But in terms of Anderson Cooper, I mean, he's kind of a hero to me, you know.
He's a hero to everybody. I mean, I'm not saying he's a bad man, but he just seemed out of his depth.
But the White House is totally in bed with CNN. I mean, they're the lung of, they pretty much perpetuate the agenda. I mean, there's no objectivity there whatsoever, right? It wouldn't at all surprise me that these lawyers or these reporters are sort of brief on the questions to ask if they're lucky enough to get an interview. All this stuff is all sort of set up. It's almost as if there's a script that they're trying to pitch to us. So I look at that and I think, no, man, I don't believe anything that anybody's really telling me. What I believe is what's happening on the ground with the troops right now, and we're not getting their story. That's the story we need to hear. You know, look at Mike Moore. Look what he did to them. He destroyed the argument of the left. Everybody's now schooled in this Mike Moore sort of liberal hate, and it's just... it's made the liberal argument irrelevant.
Justin, thank you very much. We got Sean from New York. Sean, how are you?
How you doing tonight?
Good.
Now, I don't know a lot about politics, okay, but I was listening to...
Hell, you're in New York. You breathe politics.
Yeah, right. No, I'm just a normal guy. But one of the things I thought was kind of interesting about today in the UN is that there was no news about today as being a special day from within the United Nations. And that special day is the National Day of Peace. So today is International Peace Day. And it's supposed to be a day of peace where there isn't any war anywhere around the world. We're supposed to be able to bring humanitarian aid into people and help people and basically try to de-escalate with the hope for, you know, basically if we could do it for one day, maybe we could do it for 2 days, then maybe three, and maybe, you know, finally we could have peace on Earth. And, you know, we talk all about, you know, needing to have these wars for peace, but you can't have a war for peace. You know, you have to have peace for peace. You know, there is no way to peace except for peace.
Sean, but sometimes there is good and there is evil. But I want you, Sean, they're making nasty signals at me from Master Control. Can you hang on for a short break?
Sure.
Thanks.
Sure.
Montreal, we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
And we touched a nerve today. The lines are full, and we wanted to hear from you whether you're as reviled by the scene of the General Assembly as I am. And we're talking with Sean from New York. Sean, we were talking about peace for peace and today being International Peace Day. And, you know, you said you don't make peace through war, but there is good and evil. And some guys...
Oh, yeah, you're right.
You can give all the peace signs. Hey, I'm from the peace generation, right, man? So you can give all the peace signs in front of these characters from Tehran through Baghdad through Damascus that you want. They want to whack you. They're going to whack you. What are you going to do?
Well, I mean, there's always criminals. That's the problem. We always have criminals out there.
But these are criminals running countries.
Yeah.
Who think nothing of sending tens of thousands of people are being trained right now to blow themselves up, Sean. What do we do?
That's right. Those are exceptions, people. Those are criminals. The thing is...
You know, I want to think that they're exceptions, Sean. We keep hearing about radicals versus the Arab street. When are we going to see moderate members of Islam in the Arab world march, not for anything else than to stop the killing of Muslims by other Muslims, to stop acid being thrown in the faces of little Muslim girls because they're going to school?
Yes.
It's time.
You're
it's
right.
time. It's time to stand up and become engaged and put your body on the line. That's not a bad thing. You know, the Prince of Peace.
Sean, I
got to get to some other calls, but I want to leave you with one thought. The secular Prince of Peace was Gandhi, right? And Gandhi said, yes, we are a society of laws and not of men. But when bad men make bad laws and unprincipled officials compromise good ones, then it's time to stand up and be a man and exercise responsible agitation to stop governments from staggering drunkenly from wrong to wrong merely to perpetuate their own immortality. And these governments in the Middle East are imprisoning their own people and staggering from wrong to wrong. I thank you very much for calling, Sean. Evan from Westmount, how are you?
Very good this evening. Beryl, I just want to thank you very, very much for basically voicing my opinions. But, of course, when I do it, I tend to get shouted down.
Nah, you can't let them get you. What do you mean, shouted down?
Oh,
you remember, Harry...
I tell them I'm for the states, and everybody looks, you're for the states. You know, we can't be in your company, et cetera, et cetera.
So tell them not to sell to the states.
You know, that's what I do.
You're from Westmont. You must know a lot of business people. Tell them not to sell to the states. Exactly. You must know a lot of academics. Tell them not to bring in any books put out by American academics.
I go to them and they say, why are they in Iraq? And they say, why are you supporting the Iraq war? And they call me, they say, I'm just right of Attila the Hun. And I say, no, excuse me. First of all, everybody seems to forget that Saddam Hussein attacked Kuwait in 91. It seems to have dropped off. It's like out of the
out of the radar screen.
It's out of the history books. Okay?
Off the radar screen.
And the guy destroyed the country. I mean, I don't know how many years it took. And they say, oh, yeah, the U.S. is all about oil. You don't think Iraq didn't invade Kuwait? Kuwait didn't.
Evan, you know what your answer is to them? So what? I don't care if they want to go into Iraq to stabilize the oil supply. Saddam Hussein was whacking his own countrymen 200,000 a year. He was killing them.
I agree with you 100%.
The man gassed villages, killed 400,000 Kurds. I'm not looking for virginity of purpose. I'm looking for the result that will have a stable world without tyrants. So you tell them that.
And you know.
I know it's very un-Canadian, by the way, because Canadians like a litmus test of purity.
Of course. And they also say, yeah, but what about the UN? And I said, you don't think the U.S. didn't go to the UN first and say, we all have to send troops to Iraq to monitor stuff? Okay. And the UN says, oh, we can't do that. I mean, God forbid the UN should actually do something these days. There was a time, I guess, pre-1980 when the UN would walk into a place and actually, you know, do something and have some good. I suspect after 1980, you know, that kind of fell through. You know, the UN is useless. I still remember even articles in the paper about how many third world countries don't even pay their UN dues. Okay.
And America pays $5 billion a year. $5 billion.
You know, and Canadians sit there and criticize and criticize, and it just drives me absolutely.
Well, you know, the next time one of the Salon liberals in Westmont particularly brings up the UN, remind them that Mr. Kofi Annan's son was implicated, and Annan covered up the implication in the oil for food scandal, which was done with American dollars.
I've mentioned that to them.
Not to mention the implication, by the way, of certain highly placed Canadians who shall go nameless because of libel laws.
And you know, again, I'm also impressed with Ann Arbor, head of the Human Rights Commission. Oh, and I'm so proud she's Canadian. Very impressive. I love the people in the commission. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, you mean Louise Arbour.
Sorry, Louise.
Yeah.
Right.
I'd like her to find another country.
I hope she gets.
Evan.
You know,
I thank you for your comments. Don't worry. Next time anybody gives you hell, tell them, I'll give you hell right back, but it's not hell. I'm just telling the truth and you think it's hell. Have a good night, Evan.
You too, Bill. Thanks.
We've come to the end of the line for tonight. It is right to speak bluntly. It is right to act toughly. The fight today is not only on the military battlefield, for in the years to come, this global conflict we're now engaged in may well be decided by those free men and women who succeed in rousing so much of the West from its lethargy and make all people understand Benjamin Franklin's admonition that justice will not be served until those who are unaffected become as outraged as those who are affected. Thank you, Nick Mays and Master Control. We'll see it on Monday night.
Can be heard Monday through Thursday night from 7 to 8.